This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. In the fight against global warming, scientists have devised all sorts of techniques to keep carbon out of the atmosphere. Fancy carbon dioxide scrubbers on smokestacks, artificial carbon-sucking trees. And how about locking CO2 in ocean rocks deep below the bottom of the sea? But here's a simpler idea. Why not use nature's carbon capture technology, plants, and just store all the carbon underground in soil? As my next guest writes in her book, The Soil Will Save Us, keeping the soil healthy can be good for farmers and the planet. And how do we do that? Well, Kristin Olson is here. She's author of The Soil Will Save Us, How Scientists, Farmers, and Foodies Are Healing the Soil to Save the Planet. And she's a writer based in Portland, Oregon. And we have an excerpt of the book at sciencefriday.com/soil if you'd like to. Also, you can also call us. The number is 844-724-8255, 844-SCI-TALK. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Ira. Thank you.
The title of your book, The Soil Will Save Us, can it really do that? How is it going to save us, and how and why?
Well, the soil has been playing a mighty role in our climate, you know, ever since we've been a planet. The soil is incredibly alive beneath our feet. There's really a parallel universe down there with 6 billion microorganisms in a teaspoon of healthy soil. And there's a lot of sex and fighting and feasting and cooperation going on down there, just like there is above the soil line. And kind of everything we want for our planet above the soil line depends on the activity of those microorganisms below.
So how do we get those microorganisms to soak up all that CO2?
Well, they're already doing it. You know, they've been in a partnership with plants ever since plants came into existence a couple of billions of years ago. What happens is that plants take carbon dioxide out of the air. They convert that into a carbon fuel for themselves, but they share 40% of that carbon fuel with the soil microorganisms. And the soil microorganisms take that carbon fuel and they eat it and they grow with it and they use it as a glue. They make a glue with it to create habitat down in the soil. And all those activities fix carbon in the soil. And that's been going on for billions of years. The difference is when humans came along and started messing up nature with agriculture, with burning forests, with plowing up the soil, with changing the behavior of animals on the land, we started releasing that carbon that's in the soil.
Mm-hmm. You say that if we leave the soil the way it is, instead of plowing it up for crops, and it's actually much more efficient if we just dig a hole and throw seeds in there than doing the kind of plowing that we're doing, and better for the soil and all those microbes living in it.
Right? Because when we, you know, so much of what we do, we're fighting nature. I mean, nature does not, if anybody who's had a garden and spends a lot of time weeding knows that in just a few days, nature is going to start throwing some weeds back in there because nature does not like bare soil. Mm-hmm. Nature likes diverse, dense vegetation on top of undisturbed soil. So most of what we do in agriculture and in our land management sort of violates that basic setup that nature has had going for billions of years.
It's amazing some of the figures you have in your book. You talk to a scientist, David Johnson of New Mexico State University, who claims that just 11% of the world's cropland could potentially offset all our current carbon dioxide emissions. That's possible?
Right. He's been doing some amazing work out there in arid New Mexico with a kind of agriculture that doesn't plow, so it's no-till agriculture, and with intense cover cropping. So cover crops are something that farmers have used for years and years to protect soil and to protect it from being eroded and all that. What scientists now understand is that those cover crops, by having roots in the ground that are sending down that carbon fuel that plants are making out of carbon dioxide, those cover crops are feeding that underground community of soil microorganisms, which is in turn building up carbon in the soil, making the soil more porous. So it's very healthy for the plants that are growing. It's very healthy for the land, but it's also removing a lot of carbon from the air.
You know, we talk a lot on the program about the microbiome in our guts. You know, there are trillions of bacteria, trillions of viruses living in there. It sounds like you're talking about the same thing that's in the guts of the soil.
It really is the same thing. I often point that out to people, you know, that Earth's microbiome is equally dense, equally diverse, and equally essential. I mean, really, there's nothing, life as we know it would not exist without this partnership between soil microorganisms and plants. And, you know, it's amazing. I said 6 billion microorganisms in a teaspoon of soil. They've been found down as deep as 20 miles down in the soil. So it's a thriving ecosystem that's been going, that's pre-existed humans by billions of years, and it's very essential. And so what a lot of farmers are learning now is that if they work with nature, if they mimic nature, instead of doing what agriculture has done for you know, for centuries, and especially in the last century of industrial agriculture, when you drive out and look at the vast majority of agriculture in this country, you see, especially driving through the Midwest, you see miles and miles and miles of only corn separated by these bare rows. And a lot of farmers are discovering that when they really change that, when they get away from that paradigm of long empty rows like that and add in diversity and density to their soil, that they're much, much more productive. In fact, you're going to be talking to one of those
farmers.
Yeah, let
me bring Gabe on. We have one of those farmers. Gabe Brown is a farmer and rancher based outside of Bismarck, North Dakota. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So what are you doing differently from what other farmers are doing, Gabe?
Well, the number one thing, there's five basic tenets, so to speak, to getting your soil back to a regenerative state, getting it back healthy, like Kristen's talking about. And the one thing is we are 100% no-till. We have not tilled any of our soil for over 20 years. The other things we're doing, we're increasing the diversity. Instead of growing the monocultures that you see so often, like corn or soybeans, it's not uncommon for us to have a cover crop of 20 or more species growing in a field at a time. And Kristen was exactly right when she said that we want to mimic nature. Nature abhors a monoculture. Nature does not like monocultures. It likes diversity. And it's through that diversity that we can sequester that carbon, put that carbon into the soil, and then that carbon, in turn, through the soil biology, is what produces healthy crops, in turn healthy animals, and eventually healthy people. Mm-hmm. So we're bringing the whole system together, thinking of our farm and ranch as an ecosystem versus just the current production model, which is monocultures and low diversity.
Mm-hmm. And your production, your output has not suffered from this, from doing it the old fashioned
way. No, quite the contrary. Our expenses are a fraction of the conventional production model because we no longer need to use all of these synthetic fertilizers and pesticides and fungicides, but also our yields, if you're talking the amount of grain that we're producing per acre, is above the average in my surrounding community. So we're getting more production at a much lower cost, and in turn, we're regenerating soil, which is the important thing.
Let me ask both you and Kristen, how do fertilizers affect the relationship between the plants and the microbes? Kristen?
Well, as I said, plants and microorganisms have had this partnership going on for billions of years. The plants send down 40% of that carbon fuel or more, but 40% is a good number, down to their roots, and the soil microorganisms cluster around those roots and feed on that carbon sugar. But in turn, what the soil microorganisms do, they have enzymes that liberate nutrients from rock and from dirt, and they bring those nutrients to the roots where the plants can absorb them. So there's that partnership that's been going on. And if you think of all the possible elements that there are. I mean, plants are supplying all those elements, all those many, many nutrients available in nature to the plants. So when people apply fertilizer, it disrupts that ancient partnership, that ancient feeding mechanism that's always existed between plants and soil microorganisms. And simply speaking, plants just get lazy. You know, plants don't have to share carbon sugars with the microorganisms if there's a plop right near their roots of these synthetic chemicals with a couple of mineral nutrients. And then what happens is that the community of microorganisms gets sicker, gets dormant, and so the whole system is disrupted. And really, when somebody makes a transition from conventional agriculture to regenerative agriculture, it takes a couple of years for that system under the soil to bounce back.
Mm-hmm. But 844-724-8255 is our number. There are lots of folks on the phone. Let's see if we can get a call from Carol in Chicago. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I think this is a really fascinating subject, and I am somebody who grew up in an agricultural family on the prairies of southern Wisconsin. My question is this. I've seen some people do what they call no-till farming, but then they end up using a whole lot of chemicals to then try and kill all the things they didn't till under when they're growing their crop. Can you comment about that?
Gabe, can you pick that up?
Sure. And we need to think of it this way. You know, soils under the conventional production model are kind of like a drug addict, and they have to be weaned slowly, as Kristen said, to build these populations. And so often, I deal with hundreds of people all over the world on this subject of regenerative ag. I work with farmers and ranchers all over the world, and the thing I tell them is it takes time, but if you're willing to get over the hump, so to speak, and to really focus on regenerative agriculture, in a period of 3 to 5 years, you will significantly be able to reduce those inputs, whether we're talking fertilizers, pesticides, fungicides, herbicides. And on our operation, we've been able to totally eliminate. We haven't used any synthetic fertilizer since 2008. We haven't used any fungicides or pesticides since before the turn of the century, and we only use a herbicide pass once every 2 or 3 years. So we have a fraction of the use of those synthetics now that we used to. Mm-hmm. But it's just a matter, so often when you hear people going back, oh, we got to use more of it, well, they're sticking in the current production model, and they're probably only growing monocultures with very little diversity. As Kristen said earlier, you have to keep the soil covered. So you have to have cover crops growing on there. And if there's a healthy cover crop growing, you're not going to get the weeds coming on there then. So you will not need the use of herbicides.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International, talking with Kristen Olson and with Gabe Brown. We're talking about the best way to farm. Kristen is author of The Soil Will Save Us, How Scientists, Farmers, and Foodies Are Healing the Soil to Save the Planet. Gabe, do you think that if we heal the soil this way around in enough of the soil, we could suck up enough CO2 to make a difference?
There's absolutely no doubt in my mind about that. Absolutely no doubt. Then at the same time, we can alleviate a lot of these other ills that we're seeing. Look what's happening in Toledo, Ohio, where they can't, you know, use the drinking water because all the nutrients going into the Great Lake. Look what's happening in the Gulf of Mexico with all the nutrients going down the Mississippi. If we focus on healing the soil and regenerative land management, we will be able to significantly reduce those fossil fuel usages, the usages of all the nutrients. Think of what that would do for our economy also.
So
would
why
no longer
so,
be as dependent on foreign oil.
So farmers like you must understand this. Why aren't more farmers doing what you're doing?
Well, we are seeing a significant upswing in the number of people that are moving to regenerative agriculture. The main reason, in my mind, without a doubt, is the current farm program. The current farm program is designed to guarantee farmers some income based on the crop insurance. Well, what's the thing that the crop insurance that's going to pay the most right now is corn and beans. So it's geared to this monoculture type system. You can't blame the farmers and ranchers when they're putting, you know, a lot of money at risk every spring going out. They want to buy this crop insurance. Well, the crop insurance that pays the most are corn and beans right now. So it's kind of, they're stuck into this vortex of the current production model.
Mm-hmm. Kristen, how do you then stimulate the farmers to change what they're doing?
I think that there are a lot. I think most, many farmers really would like to change what they're doing. And I think it is a complicated question. I think that a lot of them live in communities where their brother-in-law and their cousin, are selling farm chemicals or, you know, are tied up in industrial agriculture in one way or another. I think socially, there are some social mm-hmm. pressures. And I also think, you know, here they are. They're in charge of all these plants. And I think that it's they're necessarily risk averse about, you know, I mean, they're going to be in bad shape if those plants die. But I think that I think that a lot of farmers really would like to change, and I think that's been shown by some of the really interesting partnerships that have come up that I talk about in my book. Adam Chambers, who's a climate scientist with the National Natural Resources Conservation Service here in Portland, is working with farmers in the Northwest to transition them from tilling, which breaks up that structure, that habitat that microorganisms make in the soil, and releases carbon from the soil and turns it into carbon dioxide. So he's working on a program to help farmers transition from tilling to no-till agriculture, and they're going to be getting a little payment every year for making that transition, and given 3 years because that's what the estimation is. I'm going to have to leave it there.
Okay. Very interesting stuff. Kristen Olson, author of The Soil Will Save Us. Also, Gabe Brown, farmer and rancher based outside of Bismarck, North Dakota. Thank you both for taking time to be with us today.